Hello, all sentient beings, and welcome to the Transmissions Podcast, where we talk about all news, toys, and comics related to the...
Stewie, do you want to be the Autobots or the Decepticons?
What's with all these labels, man? Autobots, Decepticons, gay, straight, just pick a few robots and let's party.
Hey, what's going on in here?
Oh, hello, Brian. We're playing Transformers.
Oh, cool. Who's this little guy?
It's my new friend, Scotty. Do you mind? We're busy.
Oh.
Hi, doggy. You want to play with us?
Scotty, it's fine. It's fine. You don't have to. He doesn't know Transformers.
Yeah, actually, I'd love to play. Who should I be? Should I be one of these guys? I'll be this guy. Who's this guy, huh? What's this guy's story?
That's Optimus Prime. You can't be him. Scotty's Optimus Prime.
Oh. All right, well, I'll be this guy. How about this guy? Rawr!
What was that? Did you just growl? What robot growls? That's Starscream. He's a Decepticon. I'm the Decepticons. Look, why don't you just beat it?
All right, relax. I'll be this guy over here.
That's He-Man. We're playing Transformers.
Well, maybe this is the one where He-Man visits.
Brian, how is He-Man supposed to get to Cybertron?
Hey, up, up and away, right?
He-Man doesn't fly.
Look, why are you being such a dick about this? I'm just trying to join in.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about, okay?
That's not fair. Like I think I'm doing pretty well.
No, you don't know the characters, Brian. You don't know the characters. If you could hear yourself right now, you would not stop throwing up. You can't just put He-Man in Transformers world. All right? He wouldn't be able to get to Cybertron because he lives in Eternia, and Eternia is in an entirely different dimension.
He can just take his rocket ship.
Get out of here.
Welcome to Transmissions, the podcast for Transformers fans, old and new. I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team, Yusuf, better known as Yoshi.
Yo, Charles.
Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Howdy.
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Let's talk Transformers.
All right, and we're going to jump right into toys. We don't have a lot of toys news this week, but we have some
good ones. Can we blame the industry?
Well, you know, we're a media outlet, so we just take what we get.
Okay.
So, Daryl, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, sure thing. We've got the first new movie toy. And it's an Optimus Prime figure, as it should be, I guess. We got images of leader class Optimus Prime from Transformers Age of Extinction from the Hasbro press release event for the figure. I'm not too excited about this. Not only is it a movie figure, but it looks horrendous. I mean, you've got these... First of all, you've got these ginormous weapons on it that make absolutely no sense whatsoever.
We haven't seen the movie yet.
It's true. It's true. But
well, the sword makes sense given the whole Star Saber thing that's in other fiction, like Prime.
Yeah, but it's so big. It's so big.
Well, yeah.
You know, it looks so, it's just out of proportion from the figure.
That other weapon he has reminds me, like, I've been playing Halo 3 because it's free on Xbox Live right now.
Right.
And the other weapon looks like one of the, you know, the alien blades from Halo.
Okay. I'm from what I can gather, it's his gun with a shield attached to it, which is in this really canary yellow looking paint, which, in my opinion, does not fit the Optimus Prime motif.
So that's what Bumblebee turns into.
Yeah. Bumblebee's new alt mode is a shield gun.
God, wouldn't that suck if that were a movie spoiler? Like they gutted Bumblebee to make a weapon so Optimus Prime could fight?
Well, he's already done that with...
Jetfire.
Yeah, Jetfire.
Yeah, it's
there's
true.
Precedent for it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The only saving grace that I can say for this figure is the alt mode does look like a really cool looking truck. Plus, if you know this figure, which is obviously hand painted, holds true to production, it looks like there's going to be some kick ass chrome on it. And I don't remember the last time there's actually been chrome on a Transformer figure. It has to have been like a masterpiece or something like that. You know, one of them, probably the MP10 had chrome, but a mainline, a regular affordable, you know, movie figure kind of thing, having chrome, I haven't seen it in a very long time.
Yeah, I saw some other preview images where the shield was colored differently, so maybe this isn't the final color scheme for the shield and the sword.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
I see they got past the historical smokestack issue by making them too thick to swallow.
Yeah, they're humongous.
Yeah.
And they are curved, and there are three of them per side. So, yeah.
I have seen, like, images from the filming of the movie where it does... I mean, the truck looks spot on to the movie truck.
Mm-hmm. He obviously is looking like he's wearing some kind of cape. It's the kibble from the alt mode, is turns into this, you know, either kind of shoulder pad cape kind of thing. And then the back of the figure is just a chunk of kibble. It's just a humongous piece of alt mode that just can't seem to find a place anywhere. We'll have these pictures up on the show notes so you can take a look at them. I'm really not impressed with this. The image of Optimus Prime that I keep, and you know, it varies from show to show, but it always seems to be standard. Blue legs, red torso, silver whitish, you know, thighs, right? You know, that kind of thing. This is a mishmash of garbage. I'm not overly happy with the way that this figure is turning out, especially in robot mode. Alt mode, alt mode I actually kind of like. It could sit in alt mode and you could lose it in a shelf full of vehicles. It looks really good. But robot mode, it looks terrible.
Yeah, I gotta agree there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty poor transformation. I think it's just, you know, his alt mode basically covers up the robot mode. There's no kind of blending of the alt mode parts into the robot mode. So it doesn't really, you know, make it look nice. It just looks like
oversized G.I. Joe with body armor.
Yeah.
Wow. And this is the suggested retail price is $45.
Well, it is leader class, right? So
$45 for that. I don't think I'd be doing that.
I know leader class stuff here in Canada is generally, $59.99. So you're in that ballpark with leader class pricing. So, I mean, pricing on it is not that crazy, but there's no way in hell I'm buying this thing when it looks like this.
But, I mean, with a Cyberverse class toy, I would, you know, expect that kind of back kibble and everything.
Exactly,
and, you know,
yes.
Bad transformation. If I'm paying $50 for a toy, it needs to hide the vehicle parts much better.
Especially a leader class one, right? These are the people that, you know, granted, Takara produces Masterpiece, but Hasbro, you know, they're still in with those people. These guys have pulled off some of the most amazing transformations in figures recent memory. And yet they still, out of their stables, are coming up with stuff that looks like this. Now, there's got to be more to the story that you can only do such and such with, you know, with this, and this is the way Bay wanted it to look, or some bullshit like that. But I'm not overly happy with this. I almost prefer the previous trilogy Optimus Prime to this. This looks really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've kind of painted themselves into a corner with the whole movie aesthetic in general. And I think the fact that, you know, the movie people designed the Transformers rather than the toy people, I think if they had started with toy designs and then turn those into movie models rather than the other way around, we'd get a better set of figures. But I think, you know, it's very difficult to turn the movie aesthetic figures into nice looking toys.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, take Transformers Prime versus the movies. They both have a similar aesthetic, but in Prime, the toys are much better because I think they came first. Mm-hmm. And then the TV models were made after that.
Right.
Whereas, yeah, like you said, the movies, it was done in reverse. And then you get this. And this is probably going to be the first toy that's on the shelves. So it's the one that is really supposed to kick off the marketing,
yeah,
for the movie. And that's just not going to do it.
No. Not for me, anyway.
Got to get those bumblebees out.
Yeah. Well, you better believe there's going to be at least two or three per wave. But, yeah, this is not getting my excitement for the movie going any faster. I mean, I'm excited for the movie because it's a Transformers movie, but I always like picking up new figures, obviously, but this is not good. I wouldn't have even held a press conference for this crap.
All right. Well, let's move on to disappointment and being underwhelmed to something that was totally awesome. So Jeremy, why don't you tell us about that?
but still disappointment because it's not a real toy that we're ever going to get.
Fair
this
enough.
Is a guy who goes by the handle online, Orion Pax. His website is orionpax.de, has just made incredible figures out of Lego, and looks like he's done like a kit from Knight Rider and a bunch of other things like that. And he's gone and done a G1 Optimus Prime masterpiece made out of Lego. And, you know, it looks amazing. We'll have links to some of the pictures he's put up. But, I mean, it's got the trailer. It's got all the original trailer pieces. It has Roller. It has, I mean, if you look at the Optimus Prime figure, it looks like, you know, the masterpiece figure. And I am just very impressed with this guy.
It's really wicked. It looks badass.
Yeah, it transforms. It's got a matrix. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I could see Lego putting this in a box and saying suggested age 25 or older.
Right.
There's a lot of parts in this thing.
And this is the only non-Lego part is he used a Creo Optimus Prime head. Other than that, it's just strictly all Lego.
That's awesome.
It's fantastic. I need to check out those pictures in the show notes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a really cool figure.
And on his website, he's got even more stuff too. I mean, he's got a transforming Ratchet. He's got Devastator. He's got Shockwave, Grimlock. Lots of really neat stuff.
Hasbro needs to get this guy on the Creo team.
Yeah. Yeah. For
and
sure.
His website .de, that's actually Germany. So I wonder if, I could, next time I have a business trip, maybe I can get in touch with him.
That'd be awesome.
All right. Yeah. That's cool. So that lifts our spirits a bit from the depressing news of the underwhelming Optimus Prime movie figure.
Prime deserves better.
All right. So it's been a slow week for toys in general. So Yoshi and I haven't really found anything else. So, the Cybertronian Beast is stepping into the breach here and he's going to bring us a new toy review. So Daryl, why don't you take it away?
Sure. Yeah. We got, a review I did, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago. It was Shockwave from Transformers Prime Beast Hunters, the Voyager figure. And this guy, this is a really cool Shockwave figure. I remember that when it came out, it was very highly sought after. People were clamoring over getting this guy. And the best part is now that it's been out for a little while, if you don't have this figure, you can get it still. It's still on the shelves. He makes a perfect addition to any classics line. If you don't have a classics Shockwave, well, there isn't really a classic Shockwave, is there? So I guess you can put him right in there with your classics figures. But the newest change, or the biggest change that they did, is that Shockwave's alt mode is no longer a gun, or a ray gun, or whatever they want to call it.
Blasphemy.
I know, right? They changed it, and unfortunately, we're never actually going to see the gun mode again, officially, as the G1 toy, had. Now.
So why is that? Is that similar to the situation with G1 Megatron, where Shockwave doesn't look like a real life gun that shoots real bullets, so why won't we see it again in the States?
Well, that's part of it. Obviously, like you said, it's a ray gun looking thing, and sure, yeah, it doesn't up close. You would never ever think that it would fire a bullet. So, why would they have a problem with it? Well, from far away, a cop might think that this person is holding a real gun. So you might have those kind of issues. So they're really trying to stay away from producing life-sized weapons. And that's essentially part of it. The biggest part, though, comes from the fact that the design of the original Shockwave toy is actually owned by another company. Back in the 80s, in the early 80s, a toy company out of Korea called Toyko produced a figure called Astro Magnum. And that was a exact copy of Shockwave. This had nothing to do with Transformers. They produced their figure by itself. And Hasbro got in touch with them and basically bought production rights to Astro Magnum to produce a Transformer from that figure. Essentially, at the same time that this was happening, Astro Magnum appeared on the shelves at Radio Shack in the US and here in Canada under the name Shackwave, because of Radio Shack, right?
I remember that guy.
So, and he was absolutely identical, except for he was gray in color. So, basically, the main reason why we're never going to see this gun mode again is because the rights to that design are still owned by Toyko, or the company that Toyko became or owns Toyko, which I don't know who that is, but it's not Hasbro, so they can't make it. So if you want a gun Shockwave, then you're going to have to go out and get the Quakewave. That's the only other way to get it right now.
Okay, so this is similar to the Jetfire situation, I guess, where
yeah.
Jetfire is owned by the design for that toy is owned by a different company.
Yep, exactly. But no matter, the new alt mode for Shockwave from Beast Hunters is I want to put in quotations, a tank, because it's more of a Cybertronian tank, if anything. And it's a really good-looking tank mode. It's got the, they call it a hyperflux cannon, and this is probably, if anything, is the downside of this figure. The hyperflux cannon has a button on it which you push, which spins the barrel of the cannon, and this whole gimmick could be thrown away. The hyperflux cannon looks good on Shockwave just by itself. It doesn't need the gimmick, and I know that there are some people out there that were essentially dismantling the cannon and taking the gimmick out just to have it stay as a static weapon hand.
So, Daryl, have you seen the Fall of Cybertron Shockwave?
Yeah, I own it.
Oh, okay. So what do you think of that figure compared to this one?
It's okay. It's too small, I think, for a Shockwave figure. But again, you gotta think about it in its own line. You can't compare Fall of Cybertron figures to regular classics or even previous generations stuff, because it was a different time. Even if it was separated, even if it was separated by a couple years, the market changed and you couldn't produce figures the size that generations and classics guys were, just because of the time in which they're produced now. So the new Fall of Cybertron Shockwave is small.
Okay.
It is deluxe versus the Voyager for this.
Well, that's true, but I mean, I'm comparing deluxes to deluxes, right? Classics, like say, I like to use in my videos, a lot of my videos where I use size comparisons, I like to use Sergeant Cup from Generations as a standard comparison size, because he's just an awesome figure. And, and he's a great size because he's almost perfect classic size. He's probably a little bit taller than Hot Rod or Warpath. Some of those other guys that might be a little smaller, but he's a really good sized figure, and I like to compare with him. And Shockwave from Fall of Cybertron is really small compared to him. And it's unfortunate they're both scaled as deluxes. And but essentially, if you compare Shockwave from Fall of Cybertron to the rest of the Fall of Cybertron line, he's actually a really good figure. He's built quite well. Now, alt mode aside, his alt mode is a ship or something. I don't know if you can call it a ship. I mean,
some kind of jet.
Yeah. He's okay like that, but he's definitely not my favorite Shockwave.
Okay. Yeah, just remember, that's the model they're using for a Shockwave in the current IDW comics. So I just wanted to get a comparison with that and the Beast Hunters figure.
Mm-hmm. I do like his gun, which is kind of cool. It's got this kind of like star pattern on it or something like that. It's neat.
Cool. Okay. And we'll put a link to your YouTube video up so everyone can get a chance to see this figure in action.
Definitely. And if, like I said at the beginning, if you don't have this figure, you can still get it on the shelves right now. It's still readily available. And if you're at all interested in a Shockwave figure at all, this is a really good one to get.
So that'll wrap up our toy section, and we're going to move on to comics. So this week we've got a lot of news. So IDW is making a big push for Dark Cybertron, and there's lots of other stuff going on. So we'll start off. Yoshi, you found a little bit of interesting news about the upcoming Transformers G.I. Joe crossover that's coming out next year.
I did. So I think we kind of talked about that last week, where IDW is doing an ongoing series with Transformers and the G.I. Joe. And Tom Scioli, I think is how you pronounce his last name, recently did a podcast where they asked him a phenomenal amount of wide-ranging questions, some of them having to do with this Transformers G.I. Joe crossover. And he talks about, you know, they kind of get in depth with how he was approached by it and how what ideas he's been having without giving away any spoilers, and kind of the art style he wants to follow. And it's a really interesting listen to. If you've got some time, definitely download that podcast and listen to that interview, because this is a book that's going to be coming out. I think it's next summer, they said. And yeah, I'm going to be interested in it. I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Yeah, that looks cool. And I think he mentioned that he's a big fan of Jack Kirby, so that's one of his big influences for the style that he's looking at. So
it's a great influence to have.
Yeah.
It really is.
And I saw recently on Twitter he posted that he's actually just started going through the UK Transformers comics just to kind of get immersed in the mythos.
Yeah, I saw that too, and that definitely gives me some confidence that he's going to pay respect to the Transformers mythology.
Makes me wonder if he's going to bounce any ideas off Furman.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
You know, if he's reading that particular storyline.
I haven't actually listened to this podcast yet, but is Tom Scioli, is he more of a G.I. Joe guy, or is he more of a Transformers guy? Do we know?
I don't think he's either. I think he's done other comics. John Barber is also like co-writing this with him, so I have confidence there, because you know, John Barber is heavy Transformers guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So this guy's he's got a lot to learn then if he wants to make it good for both Joe and Transformers fans.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, they talk about his influences. They talk about the other gentleman that's going to be working with it. It's a really good interview. It's a nice long interview. If you've got some time to kill, definitely give it a listen to, Daryl. It's worth your time.
I was actually just looking at his website, and he has, on tomskeely.com, he has some, like, background into that art, that the only piece of art that they've put out, how that came to be. So we'll put that in the show notes, too, but it looks pretty interesting.
All right, cool. So check that out on Multiversity Comics. All right, next, since New York Comic Con was last week, a bunch of Transformers guys went up there, and so Newsarama did a video interview with Margaret Scott, Livio Remondelli, and Andrew Griffith. So we'll put a link to that. Definitely check that out. That you get a lot of cool insights to some of the creators of our favorite Transformers comics.
I was glad to see this interview in video form, first of all, because Margaret Scott, we've been talking about her for a while, and I finally got to see what she looked like. I met Livio and Andrew at TFCon, but I'd never seen Margaret, so definitely put a face to the name. And it's a very unique name. I definitely wanted to see what she looked like with having a name like that. I was quite curious.
Yeah, I think she's like Scottish or something. There was another podcast where she was interviewed where they went into where her name came from. So, maybe we'll put a link to that in the show notes. I think it was, who did that? I think it was the Geekcast, radio network, the Pullbag, podcast did an interview with her, and they went into the origins of her name. and all these guys, I think it would be great if we could get a chance to talk to them. So hopefully we can get them on the show at some point.
Absolutely.
All right. So this week there's a couple of Transformers comics out, or I guess there's just one Transformers comic out. But there is another comic coming out that I just wanted to mention, because we had Josh Burcham on the show a couple of episodes ago, and he is coloring Samurai Jack. He's not coloring the first issue that's coming out this week, but he's coloring issue number 2. So if you're interested in Samurai Jack, you should definitely pick that up. That the first issue is out this week. And look for the second issue colored by Josh Burcham. That'll be out in November. And I'm a fan of that old cartoon, so I was happy to see that IDW's picking this up. And of course, with Josh Burcham on the colors, that's an extra incentive to pick it up. All right, so next, IDW put out their January 2014 solicitations. So we'll put a link to this in the show notes, but there are lots of spoilers. So we're not going to talk about them now, but, you know, definitely beware. Don't click on the link unless you want to get spoiled for some of the upcoming story bits of Dark Cybertron. So in January, we've got More Than Meets the Eye number 25, Robots in Disguise number 25, which are Dark Cybertron parts 6 and 7. We've got Regeneration 1 number 98, so, you know, that's the second to last issue before the big finale with Regeneration 1 number 100. And we've got the Regeneration 1 Volume 3 trade paperback, which collects issues 91 to 95 and number 0 as well. But the big news for the solicitations was that IDW announced their new crossover that they're doing in 2014. So this seems like they're making this a yearly thing where they have a crossover event every year. And in 2014, it's going to be X-Files.
So yes! Could there be anything more awesome?
And yeah, so it's X-Files with all your favorite 80s properties. So you've got Ghostbusters, Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and The Crow.
The what?
I'm blown away. Shut up and take my money.
So, so I'm not that big a fan of The Crow, but the other three properties really have me excited. So I'm really interested to see what they're going to do with having the X-Files cross over with these properties. So,
you know, traditionally I think these have been like, bookended with the Infestation, and then each book had like their own. So it'd probably be just X-Files and Ghostbusters, X-Files and Transformers. I would love to see what would happen if Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles, you know, do they just shoot first and ask questions later?
So. Yeah.
But the shield, the shells can deflect anything, can't they?
Well,
probably.
I guess if they ever cross them over, we'll find out.
This is going to be so badass. You know, after reading the Mars Attacks thing, I just bring this shit on. I want to read all of it.
We've gotten Yoshi sold on IDW.
Won't the X-Files, when they get to the books with the Transformers, wasn't the whole point of the X-Files show to, you know, prove that there was alien life and that kind of stuff? Won't they, when they meet up with the Transformers, just be like, hey, I guess I was right?
That's a good point.
I'm totally just pulling shit out of my ass here, but it's kind of like... It's kind of like Bigfoot or Yeti. You know, we've all heard the stories, but we've never seen it. And these are the cases that Mulder gets, that he drags Scully along. And all those crazy Monster of the Weeks that they went after, they still never once came back with any conclusive proof that, you know, the Yeti exists or the man that can turn himself into liquid exists. And this is going to be like the biggest Yeti story, like giant, towering, walking robots. And Scully's just like, you're fucking kidding yourself, Mulder.
And so every time she sees them, they're going to be in vehicle mode. And...
Yeah, exactly. It just oozes awesome. I can't wait.
I don't know how
they're going to do that with Ghostbusters, though. That would be interesting.
The way I see it here, it looks like Mulder and Scully stumbled across San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, you know, it makes me think of back in when IDW started, you know, the first series they had Infiltration for Transformers, they had that character Hunter O'Neon, who was, you know, a conspiracy theorist searching for, you know, evidence of robotic life on Earth. So maybe he'll make a guest shot into this X-Files crossover where they'll go interview him and he'll be like, yeah, these things really exist and they're giant robots that can turn into vehicles and that's why you never see them. And, you know, Scully's rolling her eyes like, do we need to get this guy a stretcher?
Look at you pulling these guys out of the way back. I'm impressed. I'm impressed that you remember these.
Well, that's why he's on the show.
I guess the rest of us got to start earning our keep, Yoshi.
How dare you?
Hey, I love all you guys. I have very little knowledge of toys, so Daryl, you know, you're backing us up there.
Well, thank you.
Just keep doing it from Canada, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, but I think you guys know by now that I'm kind of a continuity nut, so, you know...
Don't look for continuity in these books.
So, but yeah, this looks really cool. So I'm looking forward to it. And we will definitely bring you some reviews when they come out in January.
Absolutely.
So excited.
All right. So we've also got a mess of, Dark Cybertron news. And just one quick correction from our review of More Than Meets the Eye number 22 last week. So we mentioned that it didn't seem like there was really any connection for More Than Meets the Eye number 22 to Dark Cybertron, even though they had a prelude to Dark Cybertron, label on the cover. But when I went back and read it again, there was one like little snippet that, you know, you blink and you miss it, where one of the characters mentions the Dark Cyclops. And I'm pretty sure that's referring to Shockwave. So like on page 18 of the comic, there's this, you know, this guy, the Ammonite spy who was working with Thunderclash and, you know, tried to take over the ship. And he mentions that he's from another robotic race that's having a civil war. And talking about, their enemy's successor is trying to win at any cost. And he says, even if it means reaching out to the dark cyclops, even if it means our planet is destroyed in the process. So I'm pretty sure that's a reference to Shockwave. So just a little tidbit there.
Sounds like a stretch to me, Charles.
Well, I guess we'll see in a couple of months.
Yep.
All right, and some more Dark Cybertron stuff. So Graphic Policy interviewed John Barber, and they asked him a bunch of questions. We'll put a link to that interview in the show notes. And a couple of things that John Barber talked about, he talked about having a much more synergy between the toys and the comics marketing. So if you've been reading any of the IDW comics, I'm sure you've noticed how toy figures are making it into the comics and actually becoming parts of the plot. In the comics, and then they're turning into figures, and the figures are being packed in with comics as well. So
unless you're in Canada,
yeah, only for you, bastards.
And John Barber is really pushing this because he wants to bring the comics into a wider Transformers fan audience. So he mentioned how, you know, this cross marketing is really a win-win for both sides, where people who just collect Transformers toys and maybe have no interest or even knowledge that the comics are out there will get them in the toys, and maybe that'll bring them on to reading the comics more. And people who read the comics, of course, will say, ooh, there are toys of these. And I definitely have seen a lot of people on the fan site saying, oh, you know, all these toys that are coming out that have the More Than Meets the Eye aesthetic of some of the figures, and they definitely want to get those. So I think it's overall a net positive. I think there have been some complaints that maybe sometimes the drive to include the toy marketing kind of, you know, changes some of the plot points or kind of negatively influences the story a little bit.
Well, look at the first 80 issues of Transformers. So, yeah, I can understand where people might be coming from.
But at least to the level it's currently at, it's not gotten that bad yet, at least for me. I'm still enjoying it.
I mean, I think the worst example of that, and it wasn't really even that bad, was what was the guy?
Goldfire?
That was a bad one too, but in RID, the construction guy.
Oh, Scoop.
Scoop, yeah, Scoop. Yeah, I think that was probably one of the most blatant, here's a character for one issue that we're going to make a toy of. But I mean, even that, it fit the story. It served a purpose. I don't think it was that bad.
Yeah.
The one part of it that I don't get, and this is just coming from the Canadian side, is that, sure, we don't get the books. I understand that. There's a lot.
Because nobody wants to write them in French as well as English.
Yeah.
So really, it's all Quebec's fault.
But it is. But we could get a download code. You could throw that in with the Canadian books. They're already making stupid frickin' stickers to plaster all over these things that make them look ridiculous. Why don't you put a download code in the package that says that when you go to the wherever, it'll give you the option. You want it in English or French? Because all you got to do is frickin' write it in French once and replace the English bubbles with French bubbles, right? You don't have to print it. You can just download the damn thing. It gives the person the option. That's, you know, it's, I can find the books. I have all the books. I don't care personally, But for the people that are going into these things saying, well, what are these for? And there are, and the explanation is, oh, they're based on comic books and we don't get the comic books. Well, give us the option of getting the books somehow, other than having to go and spend more money and finding them, because they're older now. They're not current, right? I'm frustrated that we're paying the exact same amount and getting less.
Yeah, it's probably just Hasbro Legal doesn't want to fight those battles.
I don't think it's a battle. I just think I can't see how just producing something, putting it on a server and saying, here, download this from here. You know, it's for you. It's free. If you want it,
yeah.
Make it.
Yeah, I mean, they've already got the digital distribution, so they could just make it a code that you redeem on Comixology.
Exactly.
I think maybe the big roadblock is the French translation, or at least I don't know if they actually have someone in-house who can do the French translation for them. That might be just an expense that they've considered and just haven't been willing to do yet. My question would be, if they did provide the download code, would they still have to provide a French translation to put it in the packaging?
That's what I had mentioned, is that when you redeem the code, it brings you to a screen that says, do you want the book in English or do you want it in French? Right?
Okay.
So you get one or the other. You don't get a choice of getting both, because that's more than what you paid for, right? So still getting the even swap here. You're not getting a paper copy, so Hasbro or whoever is actually paying for the printing of the comics doesn't have to actually print them anymore, so they're saving money there. So use that savings, pay for somebody to translate the book once, and fucking give it to us. Like, God, it's pissing me off.
I mean, yeah, maybe we should actually tweet this to the IDW folks or email it to the IDW folks, because maybe they'll be able to do that. Maybe that's something they haven't considered.
I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of faith in the people at IDW. They've produced some of the best stuff I've read in forever. And Hasbro is coming back. They're, you know, some of the figures they've produced in the last little while have been fantastic, right? There's got to be something else that is not.
I still think it's the lawyers.
It's got to be something with the lawyers, them liars. But yeah, I don't know. It bothers me that, yes.
It does make sense. It's just it probably comes down to lawyers and the cost of actually doing the translation.
Yeah. Just to wrap up with this interview, one other thing I wanted to mention was that he said that all three of the ongoing Transformers series, More Than Meets the Eye, Robots in Disguise, and Regeneration 1, have stable sales, and they basically have no attrition month to month. So that's really great to hear. And also the digital sales are growing, in addition to the paper copies having no attrition. So that's really something you don't hear about in the comics industry. You usually see a significant drop off after, you know, when a new comic launches, you get a initial high interest, but then you get a drop off from month to month. So the fact that they're seeing continuing stable sales for all their series is great to hear.
Not all the series. He mentions More Than Meets the Eye, RID, and Regeneration 1. You know, Beast Hunters, we know what happened there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And he's not counting illegal downloads. They should count. They're people reading those things, right? So they are readers.
Well, they don't really have the way of counting. I mean,
ah, shit. Give me some books, and I'll count them for them.
Yeah. Daryl, I'm with you on the French translation, but that's a battle you're not going to win in counting illegal downloads.
I can't get you on my side on that one.
Guys, we got to find a topic that's going to make the Canadian happy, or he's going to go crazy on us.
No, I'm.
It is good though that the digital is growing, because that's actually with the physical copies, they know how many comic stores buys in bulk. I don't know if comic stores are able to return issues that don't sell, or if they just throw them into their back issue bins. But with digital, they know the exact number of how many people bought each book, and probably locations. You know, this book was huge in China. No one in Canada bought it. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, I'm optimistic because, the platform seems to be growing. I'm sure all the other publishers are seeing similar numbers.
All right. So, Jeremy, you found a couple other Dark Cybertron related points, right?
Yeah, these are both James Roberts related, and they kind of go back to what you were talking about with More Than Meets the Eye 22. He made a post on the IDW boards basically going all into, you know, the background of that issue. Like, it was actually completed 10 months ago. Because they knew that this was going to be a pack-in comic for Skids, but they hadn't, you know, finished the last two arcs before Dark Cybertron. So he had a rough idea of where things were going to be, but he couldn't put anything too specific because he didn't want to put something in there and then not pick it up in the actual story. Yeah, and then, you know, it would come out after the story, and you know, he didn't want to have any continuity errors there. He did notice that he did find one continuity error that he did put in, where Burl shot the Terrador leader, and in issue 13, he made a statement that during that same time, that Night on the Town involved no killing. So he fixed that by, in the trade paperback, he just took that line out. So if you want the actual complete accurate story, follow the trades and not the single issues. But he also goes back, or goes into the prose story that was at the end of issue 21, because I guess there are a lot of people that weren't happy that that was the, you know, the ending of the story. And he said that it was either that or nothing, because he didn't have enough room to, you know, to put illustrated versions of the Fort Max, Red Alert, and Starscream points that he made in the prose story. He ran out of room, and he said that Remain in Light took longer than he thought. So it was either have that text story or you don't have anything. So he was going up against Dark Cybertron, so he had basically a finite time period. So it was pretty interesting. We're gonna have a link to that post. And then also he was interviewed by the Underbase on one of their recent episodes. And, I mean, he goes into not all that same stuff, but a lot of similar stuff. But he also emphatically says that Dark Cybertron is not a reboot. It will say change the status quo, but it's not a reboot. And it's a pretty interesting interview.
Yeah, that just gives me a lot of confidence that we're going to see More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise for at least another year. I hope maybe even he mentioned getting to More Than Meets the Eye number 100. So. If the quality stays where it is now, I definitely want to see him reach that goal.
I mean, they definitely have something good going. I would say with both books, R.I.D. is kind of stuck in prelude to Dark Cybertron stuff right now. But, you know, when it was hitting on all cylinders and could do its own stuff, it was just as good. So, I mean, I hope they can keep this going on.
Yeah. All right. I think that's all the Dark Cybertron news we have, and it's going to kick off just next month. So it's only a couple more weeks before we get Dark Cybertron number one. And we will definitely bring you a review of that when that comes out. All right. So now where you've got our comic reviews. So first, we're going to start with Regeneration 1, number 95. So Daryl, why don't you take us into this issue?
All right. Let's do that. It's been a while since we talked about the story portion of Regeneration 1, because last month they had issue number 0, which I guess was part of the story, but it didn't actually deal with what was happening right now. So issue 95 is part 5 of the Destiny storyline. It's written by Simon Furman, it's penciled by Guido Guidi, inked by Stephen Baskerville, colored by Jean-Paul Bove, lettered by Sean Lee, edited by John Barber. The book starts off with a epic battle between Omega Supreme and Monstructor. Great splash page on the beginning, on the first page, with Monstructor taking a chunk out of the abdomen of Omega Supreme.
No.
Yeah. The colors are just great on that.
It is.
That first page.
The art, I love the art in this book. I mean, Guido Guidi's art, combined with, John Paul's coloring is just fantastic. And the battle continues onto the next page with, Omega Supreme just pounding Monstructor in the face. It's great. And the book essentially is teeing up the battles that are happening in this issue. They're one-on-one, essentially. You've got Obviously, like I said, Omega Supreme and Monstructor. You've got Soundwave and Blaster. And then we see, Ultra Magnus, who has survived what happened in 94, which had a blast from, what are we calling this thing here? The War World?
Yeah.
The War World fired a ginormous, shot at him. So he survived that. So we've got all this happening. The War World is under an insane, attack. They've got almost every flying Transformer, in the space around it, just firing at it, or firing at each other, I guess. But I would assume they're firing at the War World. Looks like that, because it looks like the War World is firing back at it, at them.
That scene, it makes me think back to the, you know, the original G1 box art where you have, like, the big space battles and stuff.
Yes, yeah. It gives me a Unicron feel, actually.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. So we go into the War World, where Bludgeon is talking to the rest of the, well, most of them are pretenders, but you've got a whole bunch of guys in there. But the main one is Bludgeon. He's figuring out what's going on, and behind him you've got the still not active body of Thunderwing. So he's still there. Let's see here. Next page, we are on to looking at Jetfire crashing into the planet's surface with this big puff of smoke behind him. But what we don't know is that there is a vehicle trailing Jetfire, hiding themselves in that smoke, which is pretty cool. And in that vehicle is the Wreckers. And actually, yeah, they didn't land on the planet. They landed on the War World. So the Wreckers are on the case. They get into the War World, and they are looking for Bludgeon. We get away from that battle, and we join up with the Dinobots, who have recovered Grimlock. Now that Primus has left his body, as we remember from 94, Primus had entered the body of Grimlock and presented himself to the Transformers around him. So Grimlock is back to his normal self, just in time to see these, what are they called? Demons?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to see these demons show up and attack them, where Grimlock transforms into his T-Rex mode and scares the living crap out of them. And they essentially respect that. And in a very 1986 Grimlock versus Sharkacon moment, they just kind of say, "Well, we don't want to face you, so we'll join you." So they just kind of start following Grimlock around and obeying him.
Me, Grimlock, say execute them.
Exactly. So yeah, we've got that. We then go to inside the Ark, which is floating perilously above the surface of Cybertron, and inside you see Starscream looking at monitors, watching what's happening on the planet's surface, and he's communicating with Shockwave, who is still attached to the ship and controlling the ship, and he is speaking in terms of we. So he's not able to distinguish himself as an individual anymore. He is part of the ship. And the ship is part of him.
Those bottom two panels, particularly Starscream, just amazing. The art there.
Yeah, I love the Starscream one for sure. If we remember back to the beginning of the series when it restarted, Starscream was brain dead essentially. But Megatron had left him with some cognitive abilities where he could still realize what was going on around him, but he didn't have the ability to do anything about it. Shockwave, as part of the Ark, repaired him enough to be able to control himself again. And that's what we've got. A fully functioning Starscream now, who has, emphatically said, "I call the shots." So.
He's back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how Shockwave was able to restore Starscream, but not himself.
I think it's more towards the point that he might know that if he were to take himself out of the ship won't work.
Maybe.
It's probably a longer game he's playing.
It could be that too. Shockwave's definitely not one for, the quick reward. He's gonna go and make sure that he can do the most damage.
He's probably gonna figure into the very end of the series.
Oh yeah, I'm willing to bet that the Ark transforms now. And it's giant armor for Shockwave or something.
Dude.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're now back with the Wreckers, who are now within the war world, still looking for Bludgeon. But Bludgeon finds them and immediately attacks Sandstorm. And I don't know if he's dead, but he stabs him through the back. And he's not doing well.
He's not dead because at the end, all the Wreckers are seen on the escape ship.
Spoilers! Still, spoilers! So... I didn't remember that part, thank you. So, Sandstorm's not dead. Don't worry about it, guys. Anyway, the battle ensues. Bludgeon is essentially having his way with the Wreckers. They can't do anything about it. And, he's left with Cup. He's taken out everybody except for Cup. And I'm gonna paraphrase because I can't find it exactly right. But he says, Bludgeon is aware that he knows that his doom is coming. His final moments are approaching, but he knows who's supposed to do it. So he basically says to Cup, "You're not the bot that's going to kill me," and that's how he knows.
That comes later.
Oh, so I'm way ahead now.
Yeah, spoilers. He did have a good line with Cup there, though. He says, "There's no escape from destiny," and Cup's response is, "Ah, blow it out your tailpipe."
Yeah. I do miss those witty, vehicle-related quips that were very prominent in the original G1 show.
Yeah.
We get back to the outside where Monstructor is out there beating on Omega Supreme. But Ultra Magnus does show up, and they start shooting at these... I can't remember what they're called now.
Blitz engines.
Blitz engines, that's right. They're shooting at these guys because they regenerate. So every time they destroy them, they just kind of rebuild and keep going. I don't know who's Ultra Magnus is talking to. It looks like Trail Cutter, but we know Trail Cutter's not there, right?
I think that's Crosshairs. He's a Target Master.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah, the gun gives it away, yeah. All right, so he says... Crosshair says to Ultra Magnus, "We can't win this one." And Ultra Magnus says, "No, I refuse to accept a no-win scenario. Something will come up." And you see a little glimpse of the ground breaking. And then out from the ground comes Grimlock and the Dinobots. And they transform into their dinosaur modes and bring with them their herd of demons and proceed to start taking out the Blitz engines. So that's taken care of for the time being. Now we're at the time where Bludgeon is standing over top of Cup, and he says, "You are not the one fate has decreed to meet my end at the hands of another." And then he says, "Who?" And question mark. And behind him is standing Rodimus Prime, who, if we recall from issue 0, was transported there, not as Hot Rod anymore. He is now Rodimus Prime.
Yeah, he has a brand spanking new matrix in his chest.
Oh yeah, and a new looking, and a hot looking new bod. we go to the from there we go to the battle with Blaster and Soundwave, where Soundwave is using misdirection to confuse Blaster and to essentially beat him. But Blaster uses something completely different. He knows that Soundwave is using his heightened senses to find him, and all Blaster does is essentially, from what I can tell, he cranks the volume and just kind of blows him away. I had to add that there at the end there.
Yeah, finishing that sentence was probably smart.
Yeah. So he says at the end, he says, "The flip side to hypersenses is hyper pain," and so he basically takes him out easily. We're back to Bludgeon and Rodimus Prime now, and they're finishing off their battle. They're starting their battle, sorry.
Yeah, I like that Rodimus says that's just Prime, got a Beast Wars reference in there.
Mm-hmm. He says that as he catches Bludgeon's sword between his hands, and Bludgeon's not overly happy about that. He's fairly impressed if that works. He's like, that's not possible. Such focus beyond even me. And then Rodimus Prime says, Cup, do what needs doing. And then Cup, trying to see here because of the little watermarks in the way, but yeah, he goes over to Thunderwing.
Yeah, I think the plan was to destroy the Thunderwing's corpse so the Matrix energy would dissipate
right.
And shut down all the Blitz engines.
Yes. At that same time, you've got, Blitzwing, Bludgeon, taking a kick, taking a swing with his foot towards, Rodimus Prime, where Prime, grabs his foot and essentially just swings him and throws him out the large window that's behind him, sending him drifting into space forever.
He actually goes down towards the ground. If you see, he lands with a big doom.
Oh, does he?
Sound effect.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So this is like, what is this? The third, 86 movie reference we've had in this comic so far.
That's right. So now we're looking at, Cup looking at Thunderwing here, and the war world starts shaking, and you see why in the next page as the arc is now firing at the war world. And Hot Rod tells Cup that we have to get out of here, and Cup says, well, just warp us out of here, right? You got in here like that. And he says, and Rodimus says, I don't think it works that way. So they basically start getting themselves out of there. Back down on the surface, you've got the Dinobots and the demons just kicking ass with the Blitz engines, and they are cleaning house. You've got Ultra Magnus along with Prowl, Ironhide, and Sunstreaker, which have had absolutely no lines in this series at all up until this point. You see Ironhide and Sunstreaker say, "For Cybertron," so that's all they get to say as they run into the battle. At the same time, you've got Omega Supreme, looks like punching or shooting through Monstructor, so Monstructor is dead. The Wreckers are escaping the war world in their little ship that they got dropped themselves off with. And basically, they get themselves as far away as they can as the war world explodes. So we've got all that there. And you see inside the Wreckers ship that we've got Rodimus Prime and Cup there too, so they got themselves into that ship, so they're safe. But Cup asks Rodimus, why the long face, Rodimus? We won, didn't we? And Rodimus says, not sure, Cup. Primus showed me things, portentous fragments of fatal flaws in the grand plan. I fear we have only won a battle in a war without boundaries. And the book ends on a shot of the Primus chamber with the large face of Primus, and his eyes are glowing green, essentially. It looks really cool.
Yeah, and we did have another, with the last scene with the Dinobots, we had another movie reference, because he says, munch metal, and then the demons start saying, you know, munch metal, you know.
That's
so.
Right, yeah, that's right.
I've got to say, I knew Grimlock was coming back. Furman cannot stop from writing Grimlock, and that's one of the things that drives me nuts. Because when they started out, they said the deaths you get in this book are going to be final, and Grimlock died, and now he's back.
Well, you never actually saw him die. You saw him fall.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they did the standard comic book death with Grimlock. With Megatron, they did, you know, Optimus Prime reached into his chest and crushed a spark. And then, for good measure, they killed Ratchet, which had the, you know, had the psychic link with him. So they, like,
he's
dead.
For sure made him dead.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know, it seems like, you know, Grimlock is obviously Furman's favorite character, and it's, he always gets the preferential treatment, and I don't know, it's tiring to me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've got Monstructor basically exploded this issue.
Yeah.
So let's assume he's dead. Let's not assume Bludgeon is dead because the planet's surface, but you didn't see anything, so you never know. So
yeah, Thunderwing was on Warworld when it exploded, but you don't see a body. So
yeah, but he wasn't functional to begin with.
Yeah, but he was regenerating.
Right. Well, so. His regeneration pod is gone. So
yeah. So he could be dead.
Let's go with dead.
I like this as a conclusion to this whole arc. I mean, it was a very action-packed and, you know, non-stop thrill ride. The only problem, though, was, you know, at the end of issue 94, you had Ultra Magnus and Galvatron, but you don't see what happened to Galvatron here. I mean, you have one tiny panel at the end of the comic where I guess, you know, he survived, but, you know, did Galvatron just never regain consciousness after the battle? And I guess he'll wake up later and say, oh, I still want to destroy stuff.
Well, but you don't even, I wouldn't even go as far as to say that this tiny little look in the, at the last, in the last panel here, is proof that he's survived. Cause all of these images you've got, these are all images from 94, or sorry, from issue zero. That's right. So you've got G-Axis, you've got, Spike, and you've, or sorry, Buster. Buster.
No, this was Spike, cause you see the,
that's right. You've got Spike, and you've got the Dark Matrix energy thing, and then you've got Galvatron. All of these guys were all discussed in Zero as being, you know, events. So I wouldn't put it past, or I wouldn't say that this is confirmation that Galvatron survived the blast from the War World in 94.
Well, I dug up issue 94 because I was curious about this point. At the end of issue 94, the last page is Ultra Magnus standing over Galvatron's body. So his body is still, and his eyes are dark. So I'm assuming, at least it looks like he's just unconscious. I mean, I would guess that they wouldn't just say that's him dead. You know, Galvatron's a pretty tough bot, so I wouldn't expect him to go out like that. But I don't know. I mean, but at the end of issue 94, it's very ambiguous as to whether or not he's still alive.
From an outsider looking in, it sounds inconsistent if you're going to let Grimlock live and you're going to take out Galvatron that way.
Yeah.
I have to say, if you're standing over the body of somebody who you just had an epic battle with and they're out cold, at the very least out cold, and you're standing, why would you not put a couple more rounds into them?
Yeah.
They're Autobots, though. They don't do that. They don't shoot point blank. They don't, you know, kill in cold blood. They don't kill an enemy when they're down, you know. I don't know.
Stupid morals.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. These guys, they're their own worst enemies.
But, I mean, the whole battle, it looked like Ultra Magnus had bigger fish to fry. You know, the whole world's on fire, and maybe he doesn't even have time to put a couple rounds in Galvatron's head.
That's true.
You know, he's got to take care of all the other fires that are burning.
Yeah, one thing I thought was neat on this last page is the Dark Matrix creature thing. I mean, that panel is all green, and the Primus Chamber is all green, and I'm wondering if there's something going on there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, now the War World exploded, and that was like the last remnant of the corrupted Matrix.
It's true.
I'm wondering if that has any effect on Primus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a question I had when I read it last night. When was the last time we actually saw Optimus Prime?
Because he's been a while.
He's on Earth, correct?
Yep, he's still on Earth.
Right. So we have to assume we're at 95, five issues left. We got to assume Prime's coming back before the end of the series, right? They've got to tie up that loose end.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so we've still got with the whole Zero Point stuff, Spike is a big player in that. So we're going to go back to Earth at some point.
Right. And with the preview of next issue, we've got a large picture of Rodimus Prime in color standing amongst 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, essentially grayscale, but there is some color added there. Color pictures of, well, one's Circuit Smasher, aka Spike. We've got Primus, we've got G-Axis, we've got a plane. I can't tell if it's an aerial.
Probably Starscream.
Starscream, probably, yeah. And then this army of guys that were Unicron guys, right? This was Unicron followers?
Yeah, the cult of Unicron. These were Transformers who had been seduced by Unicron and were basically under his sway and attacked all the Autobots and Decepticons right before Unicron tried to eat Cybertron.
That's right. And then we've got this one that looks like either a space bridge or a ship.
Yeah, it looks like the space bridge to me.
Yeah. And
that's looks like Fortress Maximus, isn't it?
Could be Fortress Maximus. I was thinking I was thinking Power Master Prime, but there's no smokestacks or anything like that. So, but yeah, let's go with Fortress Maximus. That seems a little bit more logical. But then if he's Fortress Maximus, then we've got Swift Circuit Smasher down here, right?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I mean,
why not? It's next month.
When we met Spike initially back in at the beginning of Regeneration 1, he said Fortress Maximus died.
Yes.
Like, you know, so I don't know.
The text there actually, it mentions Nightbeat and Bumblebee. So is there any way that could be Nightbeat?
Maybe.
It doesn't really look like him. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, the head is square enough to be a headmaster for sure. But
yeah,
the chest with the box in the middle and the bumper-ish thing underneath it, that's definitely... you know, making me think something bigger. That's why I originally thought Power Master Prime because of the box in the center, but then again, there's no windshields for the chest, right?
And there's a hint of leg cannons on his leg, which makes me think of Fortress Maximus.
True, true, yeah. Anyway, we'll find out in a month for sure.
Yeah, well, one real quick thing at the beginning when they have the scene where Bludgeon is talking to his various troops. A good portion of those guys are headmasters. They've been very kind of inconsistent with what's going on with the headmasters in this series. Like, the whole arc with Scorponok implied that Scorponok was able to kind of reintegrate all the original heads onto the headmasters.
Right.
But you never saw any of the Decepticon headmasters until this issue. So, like, in that panel, you've got Weird Wolf, Fangry, Skull Cruncher, Horrible. Those are all G1 headmasters. So those should all have been guys who were, you know, there should have been some explanation as to did they get their old heads back on their original bodies, or are their Nebulon components still around, or what's going on with them?
Right.
But
yeah.
it's just a little disappointing for me that they're tying up so many loose ends here, but they can't get straight what's going on with all the headmasters. But yeah, that's a very minor point. So yeah, so we spent a good chunk of time on that, but I think that was a good issue.
Well, I'm not the best comic reviewer.
You did fine.
I definitely bow to the Master Yoshi for for comic book reviewing.
Although I may have to start muting the Regeneration 1 reviews so it doesn't kill me after this. So that when I read it, it makes sense and it's not spoiled for me.
Yes. Well, just know that everybody fucking dies.
Yes.
Well, you've got some of the trades, Yoshi. So, I mean, you've read the 80 issues already. You can skip ahead.
Yeah, right. But I'm just getting them all refreshed in my mind. I mean, I read them when I was young. It's there's a lot of stuff when I'm doing my reviews that I've forgotten or I'm re-remembering or
yeah,
you know how it is.
Try doing it like the rest of us, where we read in four different titles all in the same month and trying to go back to the same damn thing next month. Was this in Regeneration 1 or was this in Beast Hunters? What the hell am I reading?
I feel sorry for you guys, except for you live near comic book stores.
That's true. Yes.
All right, so I think we'll wrap up the Regeneration 1 number 95 review, and definitely I think this was a really good one, so if you guys get a chance to pick it up, I think you should. But now we're gonna move back. So about, what was it, like 89 issues earlier, we got issue 9 of the Marvel US Transformers. So this is way, way back. And I think I did the math wrong there, but anyway. Yoshi, you're gonna take us back to Transformers issue number 9, right?
Prelude to whatever the hell you guys have been reading. All right, so issue 9, Disintegrated Circuits. So the cover of issue 9 had to be one of the favorites for any boy growing up in the 80s. You've got a cover with a giant robot and a half-naked girl on the cover with a short 80s hip haircut.
Who is that robot they're supposed to be in the background there?
That's supposed to be Starscream, but he,
really?
He does, yeah.
It looks like someone like stole his teddy bear or something.
Seriously, like somebody took candy from Starscream and he's pouting about it. His skull, I mean his head, his helmet piece thing just looks ginormously out of place, and the face doesn't fit at all.
It's a little messy.
Maybe the only thing that saves it are the red eyes. Maybe.
No, the only thing that saves it is the girl in the front.
Yes, and this girl is the introduction to Circuit Breaker. This is the first time we see Circuit Breaker all decked out in her circuitry. And let's go through the review here. The comic book starts off with GB Blackrock and his plans to stop these robots that seem to have invaded Earth. He's got a new weapon he's going to demonstrate, and this weapon is hopefully going to be the answer to his problems. If we remember back a couple of issues, Shockwave took out his oil rig, and so he's pretty ticked off about that. And at the start of the comic book, Mr. Blackrock is enjoying some leisure time on the racetrack. He's racing around in a car. And the military comes by, stops him, and Blackrock is kind of annoyed by this. You know, this is my free time. What are you doing bugging me, is his mentality. And the military is expressing their concerns over this new super weapon that he has to take out the Transformers. And what feels like a typical, at least, what feels like a typical Iron Man response of just ignoring him and not ignoring the military and not giving a flying F about it. At least the modern movie version of Iron Man and Tony Stark. That's just how it feels. Like, he's just like, you know, this is, you guys aren't worth my time. I'm going to take care of this. You guys haven't taken care of it. Get out of my way.
That's the same feeling I got. Was very Tony
Stark.
Yeah,
I got to wonder. I wonder if that was some influence there or not.
Yeah, other than a metal suit, he's pretty close to Tony Stark. You know, he's a billionaire industrialist. So, yeah, I mean, I would guess they might have modeled him after Tony Stark.
He appears to be the only multimillionaire / billionaire in the comics universe who hasn't decided to do something super heroic. So, annoyed that his leisure time has been taken from him, Blackrock heads to the hospital to visit Josie Beller. And Josie's been busy at work in her little hospital bed and starts showing off some of the tech she's developed to Mr. Blackrock. And Blackrock is telling Josie, you know, it's my fault that this happened to you. I just want you to focus on getting better. And Josie is saying, you know, it's my fault that they got past our defense systems. If you remember, this oil rig was just armed to the teeth for whatever reason. But Josie feels responsible that this is ruined a part of BlackRock's business and that she wasn't able to save it. And BlackRock is feeling very protective of Josie. Like, you know, you're crippled because of me. I just want you to get better. And it's kind of like a daddy, you know, that's the final word, and walks out of the hospital. So Josie escapes from the hospital and confronts BlackRock in his office that particular evening. And this is where we get to first see Josie dressed up as Circuit Breaker, wearing all of her circuitry armor that allows her to walk around and move her arms as if she weren't crippled.
And it's a time honored tradition in comics of the chainmail bikini, so it's an update of that, I guess.
God bless comic book artists. And she also demonstrates that she can fire out of her hands with this new suit on. And BlackRock's reiterating to Josie, you know, I don't want you to do anything about these robots. This is my problem. This isn't yours. You really need to go back to the hospital and recoup. And we'll call her Circuit Breaker from now on, because that's how she's responding. And she just ignores BlackRock and leaves. And BlackRock's kind of left like, well, what do I do now? We cut back to the Ark, and most of the Autobots have gotten back to working again. And they're focusing on their next big dilemma, which is their fuel shortage. They've got to come up with a way to get some more fuel, or they're basically going to run out of energy and pass out. So this leads to the Autobots striking a deal with BlackRock, and this is put very politely, because Jazz and Wheeljack pretty much kidnap BlackRock and, you know, extort him, saying, you know, if you give us fuel, we'll protect you. At the same time, they're like, you know, they've got him in this threatening, they've just basically kidnapped him. And BlackRock agrees, like, he has much of a choice. And that, to me, seemed very uncharacteristic. That was pretty harsh. But I can kind of let that slide, because the Autobots are still new to Earth. They're not quite grasping that that's not an improper thing to do. At least that's how I'm letting it slide in my mind.
Well, if you go back to issue 4, Jazz is also the one who shot that flame around Sparkplug and caused him to have a heart attack. So,
oh shoot, right.
Jazz needs to work on his Autobot human relations.
Yeah. where are the Autobots' HR department? So BlackRock agrees. We then cut to Shockwave telling Starscream and Frenzy to go ahead and destroy BlackRock's new weapon that he's developing. And Shockwave is doing this more as a morale booster for the Decepticons more than anything. He doesn't really feel that it's logically important, but, you know, let's keep the morale up because he has to play morale officer now too. So we cut to BlackRock's unveiling of the weapon. An anti-robot photonic multi-cannon. That's total 80s awesomeness right there, the way they named that. And so he unveils it in this press conference, and he wants to test it out. And when he goes to test it, it doesn't work. He learns that it's sabotage. And he learns that it's Circuit Breaker that sabotages it. And Circuit Breaker did this in hopes of BlackRock would introduce her as the secret weapon, not this monstrosity of a weapon that he actually funded and had built. And he's just about to make this announcement when Starscream and Frenzy attack. And true to their rough negotiating skills, Jazz and Wheeljack pop out and protect BlackRock from the Decepticons. Circuit Breaker doesn't get that there's a good faction and a bad faction of these robots, so she's just attacking everybody. And at BlackRock's request, she stops attacking pretty much everybody and leaves the demonstration of the weapon, but not before completely destroying it. That's kind of the overarching story in that particular issue. There is a scene where we cut to Buster, and he's kind of stressing out over his father's auto shop. His dad's still in the hospital. But the cars are building up outside his shop. People are calling, asking when the cars are going to be ready to pick up. And all he can tell them is, all he can do is just give them weak excuses. You know, like, just give me one more day. We'll get it figured out, sir. We'll get this all addressed. And then he kind of has another epileptic moment where he gets a migraine and the things start floating around for him. But then he kind of has an epiphany, like he understands completely how cars work. And it's implied that by using his mind, he's able to repair the particular cars that are in the docking bay, which is kind of neat. But that was the issue in a nutshell. Think I'm leaving out anything, Charles?
No, I think that covers it. Maybe just the one little scene here where we have Shockwave, you know, talking to Optimus Prime about, oh, you must feel so proud that you created 6 new Decepticon lives here. And, you know, Optimus Prime's like, no, you know, I don't feel pride for anything that's turned to evil. And so, you know, Shockwave's like, well, I'll get used to it because you're going to be making much more for me. And of course, Prime's like, ha, fooled you, sucker. Sent the Matrix somewhere else. So you're not going to use it for your evil anymore.
Right. So those little Decepticons are the last ones you're getting.
Yeah. Got a little bit of foreshadowing. So, you know, of course we know who those 6 new Decepticon brain modules belong to, but we won't find out who they are until next issue.
Right. And we'll get into the, how he was able to use part of the Matrix juice to create those guys in the next issue.
Yeah. I also liked how, you know, they have the scene with Frenzy complaining about, hey, this human's talking about how he's going to kill us all. And then he basically has a temper tantrum. You know, it reminded me of my son. You know, he jumps up and down. He's, you know, having a tantrum. And then Shockwave is like, Buzzsaw, you know, calm him down, basically.
Right, right.
And, of course, the Dinobots are conspicuously absent from the Autobot scene here.
They are. So. They are.
Well, they weren't really damaged like the Autobots on the scene were.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, we don't see the Dinobots at all for several issues after this. It's kind of like they were forgotten about until much later.
I did want to mention that Josie Beller, as a character, she was introduced in Transformers number 5, but Circuit Breaker, her now alter ego, was... The first appearance of Circuit Breaker was actually in Secret Wars 2, number 3. So a full-on non-Transformers related Marvel book. They had put Circuit Breaker into. Specifically because, Bob Budiansky, who's the writer of the Transformers series at this time, he knew the writer of the Secret Wars series, and he had created this character, Circuit Breaker, and he said, look, I'm creating this character, and because of the partnership that Marvel has with Hasbro, I don't want to lose the rights of Circuit Breaker. I want to be able to keep her for our use, because the setup that they had with Hasbro, any character created for the comic books instantly became property of Hasbro. So GB Blackrock is a Hasbro character, even though he was created by Budiansky and Marvel at the time. So by putting Circuit Breaker in Secret Wars number 3 in September of 1985, just 1 month prior to her actual release in the Transformers book in October of 85 in issue 9, which Yoshi just fantastically reviewed, enabled Marvel to retain the rights of Circuit Breaker. It was fantastic. And they only did it, I believe this was the first time they did it. They did it one other time, for the character Death's Head. It was interesting because we've got a little clip or a little quote from the wiki here. It says, at the request of Bob Budiansky, she was published in Marvel Secret Wars number 3 before her debut in Transformers, solely so Marvel Comics could claim ownership of the character, or at least she appeared as Circuit Breaker in Secret Wars number 2, before Transformers. As Josie Beller, she'd already turned up in the series. Circuit Breaker is the trademark. So that just confirms what I had mentioned.
And that's why in Regeneration 1, Spike Witwicky is Circuit Smasher, not Circuit Breaker.
That's right.
But similar costume.
Yep. I did post a picture. It'll be available with the show notes of Circuit Breaker's appearance in Secret Wars number 2, issue 3. It's very small. It's only 3 panels long. And there's actually a ton of dialogue for those 3 small panels. But that's 80s comics for you. But that single small little 3 panel appearance that enabled her to retain as a character for Marvel use and not go to Hasbro.
So
it's a good thing too.
I'm left with questions here. Is the timeline in Secret Wars then ahead of what was going on with Transformers? Is that why there's not? I mean, I haven't read those panels, so how does she appear
out of
nowhere?
I don't have that series. I never really read it, but I do know that I think if you're looking for continuity in all this, then you're going to be looking for a while. It's one of those things that they just Budiansky apparently just said to his friend. He said, "Look, I have this character. I don't want to lose it to Hasbro. Can you put it in your book so it appears 1 month or appears before my book comes out?" And he said, "Yeah, sure." So the guy gave her a couple panels, and that was it. That's all they needed to do.
Yeah, I think with Secret Wars, you had this Beyonder character who was like this kind of, you know, godlike universal energy being. So he was just, you know, perusing different universes of people on Earth and just picking people at random. And so she was just one of the random people he picked to talk to. So, you know, it doesn't really affect continuity much at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
After Transformers and her appearance and all this stuff, Marvel did nothing with her, so it almost meant nothing to her for her to have that appearance there. But I think Budiansky may have had some kind of some plans for her as a character, but in future series and stuff. But Circuit Breaker never ever made any kind of appearance in any other book other than Transformers.
So then that leads the question, if Marvel is okay with IDW republishing these classic books with characters and properties that they own, then why was IDW not allowed to reuse the name for Spike in Regeneration 1?
I think they probably worked out separate deals, because if you remember, IDW, they published their classics volumes first, and they actually had to take out the issues with Circuit Breaker and with Spider-Man.
That's right.
And then they renegotiated with Marvel and got those issues back in, but that was probably specifically only for that collection. So they probably would have had to negotiate a separate deal to get her back in as a character again for their new series.
Yeah, or at least the name, exactly. Yeah.
Can't we all just get along?
We'd have to get rid of the
lawyers.
That's
where your lawyers come in, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of disappointing. You know, they went through all this effort to make her a Marvel property, but all it does is cause headaches for Transformers comics fans.
Yeah, but at least related with the Death's Head thing, they are actually, they have done stuff with him in the past, and they are about to do something with him again.
That's right.
Yeah, Death's Head at least got his own comic series in Marvel UK, and yeah, as we mentioned before, Nick Roche is drawing a new Death's Head comic next year, so Marvel's continuing to use him, but yeah, they never did anything with Circuit Breaker.
No.
All right. I'm not happy, but all right.
And just one other thing about Circuit Breaker, it's just nice to see, you know, she's a strong female character. She basically, throughout her run, she had no kind of love interest. She wasn't kind of tied to any romantic interest or anything. She was just a strong character.
Her fans loved her. She was gorgeous.
She was spiteful. She had no time for romance or any of that bullshit. She just wanted to kill the Transformers. She was spiteful.
And that's what made her great. I mean, it was great to see just, you know, she's a female character who has her own drives and motivations. She's a computer genius. She drives the story and everything. It's just great.
Unlike girls in the real world.
You know, but we just have this one, you know, one thing that's keeping her from being a role model to female Transformers fans is, of course, the whole chainmail bikini issue. But other than that, she's... Well,
that and the homicidal tendencies.
Yeah, well, if we could just convince her that Autobots are the good guys, then everyone would be fine. I'm fine with her killing Decepticons. You know, I think she very, very, very rarely ever took out any Decepticons. She always managed to take out Autobots for some reason. But
although if girls started showing up in this costume for cosplay, I doubt a lot of us would really argue.
I was just thinking the same damn thing.
Yeah.
No, I would definitely support that. Anybody who wants to do that, that's great.
You have all full support.
But I'm just saying, it's nice to have a female character who is, at least, you know, other than her visual look, she's not overtly sexualized.
Yes, that's right.
All right, I think we'll wrap up our classic review there, and I think that ends our comic section here. And, of course, don't forget to check out Yoshi's blog, where he gives you a written review of this issue.
And corny pictures.
Yeah, fancy pictures.
All right, so we've got a bit of movie news. So, Daryl, why don't you tell us about that?
Oh, this is the best news I'd heard for so long. Michael Bay got the shit kicked out of him. Well, not really, but he got into a fight in Hong Kong. So some ninjas attacked Michael Bay. It was essentially he was filming in Hong Kong. And the way that the studio had it set up, they had paid all the vendors or store people whoever was going to be affected by the filming, they paid them X amount of money. Well, one ninja was not overly happy with the amount of money that he was paid. So he gathered the rest of his ninjas to come.
Okay, Hong Kong is part of China. I think ninjas are in Japan. So
No. He's showing his Canadian knowledge. Let him continue.
I am being super racist. I'm sorry.
I think you'd say Kung Fu Warriors, maybe, that, you know.
There you go.
So this one vendor grabbed the rest of his Mongols and went and got stuff to hit Michael Bay with. Michael Bay got hit in the face with, where was it here? Some guy threw an air conditioning unit at him, which is just awesome.
That requires ninja strength.
Totally.
I think actually he swung, but Michael Bay was quick enough that he ducked out of the way and then somehow grabbed it off of him. Maybe he's the ninja.
Explosions in the background.
Yeah. The BBC report that we have here says that Mr. Bay, 48, received injuries to the right side of his face. So he got slapped up a bit. But I'm hoping that they filmed this and that it's in like the bonus features of the the movie.
It'll be on the Blu-ray. Yeah.
See, now this is different than the report I read. The report I read said that these people had seen the first three movies and were just trying to get their money back.
Yeah. You bastard.
They were just drugged up angry fans.
Yeah. Oh no, it's just this is fantastic news.
I want to reiterate that the good folks at Transmissions do not endorse any violence towards Michael Bay.
Unless it comes from Canada.
Then it will just be strongly worded letters and...
apologizing right now.
We also apologize to the ninjas.
Yes, I apologize to the ninjas. You guys are a very, very dedicated group of ninjutsu people. I'm going to get my ass kicked now.
Michael Bay also released his own statement about this, so I don't know how if you want to take his word for it, you can as well. So we'll have a link to that as well about his side of the story, what happened.
That's where we got the bits about his incredible ninja
That's
skills.
Right.
Explosions in the background.
He's like, it was like a zombie in Brad Pitt's movie World War Z. So is he calling the Chinese people zombies?
I wonder if that was a paid plug.
Yeah. So apparently everybody is all right. His security team, I guess, tackled that guy, and they didn't get.
But they waited for him to get a few hits off on Bay first, didn't they?
Pound, pound. Wait a second, guys. Pound, pound. All right, step in. You get 3-4 hits, that's it.
You're paying for a 15-second reaction time, not a 2-second reaction time.
Yeah. No, it's to be perfectly honest, it was all about extortion. These guys wanted more money, and
right. And
Bay's people weren't going to pay it. They had all agreed as essentially the community of vendors or store owners had agreed this was an appropriate amount of money to receive for being put out during filming. And one guy did not agree, so he was going to extort Michael Bay and the company that was producing the film. And I don't even think it mattered that it was Transformers. It didn't matter at all. It was just the fact that these guys were in the way, and they were blocking customers.
I mean, it's a pretty common thing in the film industry, when they need to film on location to compensate the people who own the property that, they're going to be inconvenienced.
Of course. Yeah. So, this guy was upset, and now I'm pretty sure that whether he got a couple hits in on Bay, it doesn't matter. He got his comeuppance as well.
Yeah, and at the end, I think the Hong Kong police came and took him away and arrested him. So
I think there was like 4 people arrested.
Yeah.
And then he said that they had a great day of shooting after that.
Yeah.
I just want to see video of this.
Look for that in the outtakes of Transformers 4 on DVD next year.
There's got to be a YouTube video or something like this.
Well, he had to have some reason for people to buy the disc.
That's right.
All right, so that's the only movie news we have this week, and so now we're going to move on to our trips to the store. So, Daryl, why don't you start us off?
Me again? All right. Not
it's a Daryl-heavy episode.
Oh, no. We got not a lot this week. I came across Air Viacon it was at my local comic book store, so it was a little bit more expensive than I wanted to pay. I think I paid $9 plus tax, so probably about 10 and a bit after tax. But it's a good-looking figure. I really like the way it looks. So this is the one that essentially looks like a car with wings, and it still becomes the classic Viacon looking robot mode from Transformers Prime. And it's a really cool-looking figure. The purple on him is fantastic. And, it's a really cool looking figure. Definitely it's Legion class, so it's really small. I've always wanted to get the deluxe version, but it's a Arms Micron, Japanese, only, like you gotta order it from Japan. And it's, it's a bit of a pain in the butt to get a hold of. Plus it's really rare, so it's definitely harder to find these days, but this'll do for now. There's not a lot to talk about, with it. It's just definitely very small. I picked that up. Plus, I also got the paper version, or the hard copy of More Than Meets the Eye number 22, which we reviewed a little while ago.
Great. All right, Jeremy, what did you pick up this week?
I got the fifth of the six Transformers Subscription Service 1.0 figures. It's Animated Jackpot, who is based off of an Action Master. And I found pictures of it from TFU.info. And they, comparing him to the figure, they got the colors and, the look pretty spot on, obviously updated. And the figure is based off of Animated Jazz. Pretty easy transformation. He comes with, his tailpipes turn into nunchucks. So I thought that was pretty neat. You don't usually see, weapons like that on Transformers. It's pretty good looking figure. So we'll have pictures to some of the other sites that have reviewed it in the show notes. And that leaves Ultra Mammoth as the last of the first version of the Transformers subscription service. And I think they're shipping that out fairly soon. I know 2.0 is starting up. They're taking orders right now. So I think they're trying to finish the first version of that up pretty soon now. The other thing I got was not really something I got in the store, but my wife and I were at a friend's house today making some jack-o'-lanterns, and I carved an Autobot logo into a pumpkin. I thought it looks pretty good, so I just, I have very little artistic ability, but I can trace pretty good. So I found a good big logo online, printed it out, taped it to the pumpkin, and there you go. It turned out pretty good.
It does look good. It looks real good.
It kind of looks more than meets the eye.
It's a pumpkin in disguise.
So with your jackpot figure, there was no damage when it was sent? I know you had some problems with the circuit figure before that.
Yep. Jackpot seems fine. Circuit had these spikes on the top that poked into the cardboard at the top of the box. And this guy was in there pretty good. So I think they might have worked out whatever issues, or he just doesn't have anything that would poke up that big.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, I mean, it's a nice little figure.
All right, Yoshi, what do you have?
Books. I just grabbed IDW's Transformers Classics Volume 6, which contains the original 80s run from issue 65 through 76. Assuming that all of these books have been pretty much the same size, I think the rumors are correct that the next issue, Volume 7, is going to have to contain the remaining 77 through 80, as well as Generation 2, if they're going to keep going at the same size. I mean, there appears to be a whole lot more notes in this particular volume than in past volumes, which I'm excited to read about. I'll give you a little insight into the stories and what the writers were thinking and whatnot.
Did these include, the Headmaster series at all? So I'm wondering if that could be in the next volume instead of Generation 2.
That could be, and that would be cool. That would be the first time I'm aware of them reprinting any of the Headmaster stuff. Right now, if you want to follow the Headmaster storyline, you have to go eBay those suckers.
Yeah, because, I mean, it seems like Generation 2 is so different, but things like Headmasters definitely fit in with the original,
Maybe series. They'll put both in. That would be awesome.
Yeah,
I think the volumes have been containing about 12 to 14 issues. So in volume 7, they could have, 77 to 80 would be the last four issues of Generation 1. Then they might have the Headmasters. That's another four issues. They might do something like Transformers Universe. That's another four issues. And then maybe volume 8 would have Generation 2, because Generation 2 is 12 issues. So that would make a nice single volume.
And you would think they would want that to be by itself, where they could really promote it rather than putting it in with the end of Generation 1.
Yeah. All right. And I'll close it out. I went to the comic book store and picked up More Than Meets the Eye number 22 and Robots in Disguise number 21, which we reviewed both of those comics in the last couple of episodes. So that's all that I got this week. I think we'll close it out here with transforming pop culture. So as I mentioned before, we try to find different things that have been affected by Transformers and kind of bled into the popular culture. And I reached back into the 80s for this one, so I hope people are familiar with the movie Spaceballs. This was an awesome movie from the 80s. It was a spoof of basically Star Wars done by Mel Brooks, who is, of course, a master in, you know, comedy movies. And, you know, he did a big send-up of Star Wars in this movie, but threw in a bunch of other sci-fi movies for good measure. You know, there's bits that call back to Star Trek and Alien and Planet of the Apes. And there is a little bit of Transformers in here. So in 1987, of course, Transformers were still big, so they get a little nod here in the movie and a couple of scenes. So there's one scene where Yogurt, who is, of course, the Yoda analog in Spaceballs, mentions that merchandising is one of, you know, his big powers, and he shows a room with all the Spaceballs merchandise, and Transformers lunchbox is figured prominently there. It's got a label over it that says Spaceballs the lunchbox, but if you look really closely, you can see the scene of the Transformers lunchbox, and it, I believe it's the same one that Yoshi showed us a couple of episodes ago that is now sitting on in his desk.
Yeah, there's a post I ran across on TFW from like 5 years ago that says the coloring book was actually a Transformers comic, and you can see a picture of Optimus Prime on it.
Oh, cool. And of course, the other big scene in Spaceballs is when the giant spaceship Spaceball One transforms into Mega Maid at the end of the movie, and you've got Barf, who is played by John Candy, who is supposed to be Chewbacca. He watches in horror as Spaceballs One transforms, and he says, "It's not just a spaceship; it's a transformer." And
why is there not a figure of that?
That would be an awesome figure.
Come on, third parties.
They're leaving money on the table.
So, yeah, that's just and this was before Transformers had come back into the mainstream with, you know, the big live-action movies in the 2000s. This is way back when they were still kind of relegated to toys and cartoons and comics. So it was nice to see them really mentioned in an actual, you know, wide-release movie.
Yeah, but, well, it was like, you know, a year after the original Transformers movie.
Right.
So you're kind of, they're probably on the little downswing, you know, the show is nearing an end.
Yeah.
So, but they're still in the general, you know, mind.
Well, the Mega Maid scene really does homage the Unicron to Cybertron scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but you also have to remember that the Transformers movie in 86 was kind of a flop too. So, you know, it still wasn't, you know, it definitely didn't make as much money as the 2007 movie made. So it was nice to see that reference there. All right, so I guess maybe one more thing. So Daryl, you found some information about TFCon coming up.
Yeah, just a quick little note about TFCon. TFCon 2014, the hotel block is now open and available. So I know it's only October, and TFCon 2013 was like 2 months ago, 3 months ago, and yeah, you can already now go and book your hotel for TFCon 2014. Its group discount is $109 Canadian per night, which is not bad. The rooms are fantastic. The date for TFCon will be July 11th. through the 13th, which is a full 2 weeks ahead of its previous dates the last 2 years. It's looking like it's going to be a good time, and I'm fairly certain I will be there. Obviously, don't know what's going to be happening at that point in time, but because it's so far away, but the plan is to be there.
Well, it's just across the street.
Of course.
From your house,
I mean,
right?
What the hell? I'll be able to hear the music from my window.
Yeah, so if you like to plan really, really far ahead, go and snag your room now.
Yeah, and as of right now, the dollar, like the US dollar and the Canadian dollar are fairly close in terms of exchange rates. So, you know, you can expect to be paying about the same.
Well, they're not taking money, right? The hotel isn't taking money. So
I'm just saying if anyone hasn't been to Canada and is worried about, you know, about that. You know, when I went a few years ago, it was, you know, almost painless in terms of dealing with the money.
Well, I mean, come up here, make sure you're super sick, when you come up. We'll take care of you. We'll make you all better, and you can get some Transformers.
Hey, we've got Obamacare now. We don't we don't need any of your Canadian health care.
it's a good start, but we've been doing this for like 50 years. So, I mean, you want to get the pro, you know, you come to us. This is you guys are just kindergarten here.
All right. Yeah, so I guess that'll wrap up this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. We'll talk to you later, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for picking up our transmission. Give us feedback on our website at www.transmissionspodcast.com, where you can find all of our contact info on social media and links to all of our show notes discussed in each episode. You can also email us directly at feedback@transmissionspodcast.com.